Hello, Rev. Farmer. If you'd like to tell Mr. Trotter, Apostolic Service Attorney's Congregation, I'm out to Trotter, in the Elgin, Texas. Today is June 1, 2024. It's the 25th day of Sivan 2028. We will start our second service on this Saturday with a song, and then we'll go and continue on part 5 of the final warning by V.C. Holliver on trumpet number 6. And we're going to continue where we left off on page 86. Father, continue. We direct our attention unto the truth and turn the four angels, which were prepared for an hour and a day and a month and a year, or to slay the third part of men, Revelation 9:15. He says, for the marginal rendering gives the preposition at for the preposition for, making the verse read at an hour and a day and a month and a year. So more exactly rendered, it would read at an hour, at a day, at a month, and at a year. Thus are designated 4 points in the time at which the four angels were to prepare for the slaying the third part of men. And as the third part in the trumpet represents, as we have seen, those who reflect Yahweh's appeals to them to repent and be saved, then accordingly, the angels preparing themselves on the four successive occasions for the eventual execution of the death upon the third part of men, showing that the men are to reject a fourth phase, four doctrine, message, each phase being revealed successively. Number one, for the only revelation of the truth pertaining to and coming at an hour is the proclamation of the angel's announcement, fear Yahweh and give glory unto him, for the hour of his judgment is come. Revelation 14:7. For the only revelation of the truth pertaining to and coming at a day is the warning of the day of the vengeance, Isaiah 63:4. For the great and dreadful day of the Yahshua, which is to be heralded by the promised Elijah the prophet, Malachi 4:5, testimonies to ministers 4:75. Number one. Number three, for the only revelation pertaining to and coming at a month is the latter rain in the first month, Joel 2:23. For the light of the angel who is the light in the earth with his glory, Revelation 18:1, 39:2, 7, 7, and 8. Then afterwards says of Yahshua, I will pour out my spirit upon all flesh. Joel 2:28. A glorious prophetic promise. It envisages the power that Yahweh is to bestow upon his messengers who are to proclaim the message that is revealed in the time of the latter rain at the right time, says the spirit of the prophecy. He sends his faithful messenger to do a work similar to that of the Elijah, testimony of Volume 5, verse 254. For the further study on the latter realm, see the Shepherd Rod, Volume 2, page 256 and 7. Number 4, and finally, as the only revelation pertaining to and coming at a year, and preparing the four angels for to slay the first part of men, it says in Yahshua, the year of my redeeming, Isaiah 63:4. And this year, at which his people are redeemed, is in the time of the seeing and of the deliverance of the 144,000. These who are redeemed and escape the slaughter decreed in Ezekiel 9, of these Yahshua says, I will set a sign among them, and I will send those that escape of them unto the nations, unto the isle of the far off that have not heard my saying, neither have seen my glory. And that they shall declare my glory among the Gentiles, and they shall bring all your brethren for an offering unto Yahshua out of all nations. Unto my holy mountain in Jerusalem, and a clean vessel into the house of the Yahshua, Isaiah 66:19-20. For these four messages prepare the four angels for the slay the third part of men, all who fail to receive into their lives the saving truth of the gospel as revealed in the four messages. They are to recapitulate, number one, those who close their ears to the proclamation of the judgment, which is revealed at an hour. Number two, those who heed not the solemn warning of the day of the Yahweh's revenge, or Yahshua's revenge, which is revealed at a day. And number three, those who receive not the latter rain that comes at a month. And number four, those who do not join the redeemed, the 144,000 who are sealed at a year. All these who fail to make the needful preparation for the glory of the land after the truth is proclaimed unto them shall perish at the command of the angel horseman, whose army numbers 200,000. Revelation 9:16-19. And the number of the army of the horsemen were 200,000, and I heard the number of them, and thus I saw the horses in the vision, and them that had sat on them, having breastplates of the fire and of Jonathan and of brimstone. And the heads of the horses were as the heads of the lion, and out of their mouth issued fire and smoke and brimstone. Now these three was the third part of men killed by the fire and by the smoke and by the brimstone, which issued out of their mouth, for their power is in their mouth and in their tail. For their tails were like unto the serpent, and had heads, and with them they do hurt. These verses immediately evoke the question, who are these horsemen and horse numbered 200 million each for the army which is to slay the third part of man? And the answering of this question, it is to be remembered that likewise the four angels were the state of the third part of man, also that they symbolize the fourfold message brought to view and the preaching of the paragraphs unmistakably, therefore, the army of the horse is figurative of the workers who proclaim the final message. That the symbol horses is correctly interpreted for the representing of the gospel workers. Its future is further borne out by the Zechariah 14:20. These horses are used to symbolize preachers, those who sound the bell, the alarm of the warning, the message of the salvation. Like the locusts, therefore they represent the messengers of the Yahweh, but under the different circumstances, for more ample treatment of this symbolical meaning of the horses, read chapter number 2, the warning paradox of Zechariah 6. So as the horses are representative of the gospel messenger, and as they are controlled and guided by the rider's divine being, then the horsemen that automatically follows are figurative of the angelic host who lead and direct the saints in their work of the proclaiming of the message and subsequently in the killing of the third part of men who reject it. But since riders and not horses do the killing when engaged in the battle, these supernatural beings, as the angelic horsemen, are the ones who actually do the slaying. Hence, they're having breastplates of the fire, protection of the spirit and of the jettison and brimstone. What then, we may ask, is the power of the horses? These are 200 billion horses. We have learned symbolize a great army are the gospel workers from whose lips go a message which means life or death. That therefore must be the power in their mouth. Consequently, the fire, smoke, and brimstone which issue out of their mouth are figurative of the message which they proclaim. For the power of the Holy Spirit, the fire, the sacrifice of Yahshua, the smoke, and the destructive judgment of Yahweh, the brimstone, this threefold message was a third part of man's will. Revelation 9:18. For the nation and sin that will not serve thee shall perish, yea, those nations shall be utterly wasted. Isaiah 60:12. Okay. Lift ye up a banner, saith the Yahshua, upon the high mountain, as Yahweh's holy church. Exalt the voice, the proclamation of the gospel unto them that shake the hand, that they may go unto the gates of the nobles. I have commanded my sanctified one, a ministry, 200,000 horses. I have also called my mighty one, the angelic host, 200,000 horses. For mine anger, even them that rejoice in my highness, for the noise of a multitude of the army of the Revelation 9:16, in the mountains, like as of a great people, a tumultuous noise of the kingdom, a tumultuous noise of the kingdom, and of the nations gathered together, the Yahshua of the host musters his host of the battle. They come from the far country, from the end of the heaven, even the Yahshua and the weapon of his indignation to destroy the whole land. How ye, for the day of the Yahshua is at hand, it shall come as a destruction from the Almighty, that's the Father. Therefore shall all hands repent, and every man's heart shall melt, and they shall be afraid. Pains and sorrows shall take hold of them. They shall be in pain as a woman that travaileth. They shall be amazed one at another. Their faces shall be as the flames. Behold, the day of the Yahshua cometh cruel, with the wrath and fierce anger, for the land of the land desolate, and he shall destroy all the sinners thereof out of it, for the stars of the heaven and the constellations thereof shall not give their light. For the sun shall be darkened and is going forth, and the moon shall not cause their light to shine, and I will punish their world for their evil and their wicked for their iniquity, and I will cause the urgency of the pride to cease, and will lay low the hardness of the terrible. I will make a man more precious than fine gold. Even a man than the golden wedge of Ophir. Therefore I will shake the heavens, and the earth shall remove out of her place in the wrath of the Asher of the host, and in the day of his fierce anger. Isaiah 13:2-13. And Elisha prayed and said, Yahweh, I pray thee, open his eyes that he may see. And the Yahweh opened the eyes of the young man, and he saw, and behold, the mountain was full of the horses and chariots of the fire round about Elisha. 2 Kings 6:17. If thy eyes were open as were the eyes of the young man, we too would see an angelic host round about the Elijahs of today. And now, as to what swelled the number of the preachers from the 144,000 to the 200 million, Yahshua says, I will also take of them of those whom 144,000 shall bring from all nations after the fulfillment of the Isaiah 66:16 for the purification of the church, for the priests, and for the Levites, Isaiah 66:21, for the very fact of such a multitude of the workers speaks for itself that they are engaged in the reaping the harvest of the whole world. Here is pledge, here is in a pledge word. Let's do that again. Here in a pledge word, Yahweh foretells in the clearest tenor that many of those whom he brings into the church after the purification will join the 144,000 in the proclaiming of the message unto the whole world when the earth is lightened with the glory of the of the angel of Revelation 18:1. Then shall the sons of the strangers say to Yahshua, build up thy walls, and their king shall minister unto thee, for in my wrath I smote thee. For the sons also of them that afflicted thee shall come bending unto thee, and all they that despise thee shall bow themselves down at the soles of thy feet, and they shall call thee the city of the Yahshua, the Zion of the Holy One of Israel. Violence shall see no more, shall no more be heard in thy land, wasting no destruction within thy borders, that thou shalt call thy walls for salvation, and thy gates praise. For the sun shall be no more thy light by the day, neither for the brightness shall the moon give light unto thee, but the Yahshua shall be unto thee an everlasting light, and thy Yahweh thy glory. Isaiah 60, verse 10, verse 14, 18, and 19. And it shall come to pass, and in all the land, saith the Yahshua, two parts therein shall be cut off and die, but the third shall be left therein. And I will bring the third part through the fire, and will refine them as the silver is refined, and will try them as gold is tried. They shall call on my name, and I will hear them. I will say, it is my people, and they shall say, the Yahweh is my Yahweh. Zechariah 13:8-9. Two parts lost and one part saved make three parts in all. For the one third, Revelation 9:15, shall be slain by the fire, smoke, and brimstone, Revelation 9:18, before probation closes. The remaining wicked, who are slain by the seven last plagues, Revelation 16, and by the brightness of his coming, 2 Thessalonians 2:8, after the probation period, makes the other third. For the saved, the last third, are the things that left their ends, Zechariah 13:8. Revelation 9:17. And the heads of the horses were as the heads of the lion. For the lion, the king of beasts, is strong and fearless. Accordingly, the last gospel ministry, that which the lion's heads have symbolized, is fearless in its efforts to spread the gospel truth, and is triumphant over all nations, witnessing prophetically as conquering power. The prophet Joel declares, a great people and a strong that hath not been ever the like, neither shall be any more after it. A fire devoureth before them, and behind them a flame burneth. The land is as the garden of the Eden before them, and behind them a desolate wilderness. Yea, and nothing shall escape them. For the appearance of them is as the appearance of the horses, and as the horsemen so shall they run, that the noise of the chariots on the tops of the mountains shall they leap, like the noise of flame of fire that devours the stubble, as a strong people sit in battle array. Before their face the people shall be much pained. All faces shall gather blackness. They shall run like the mighty men. They shall climb the wall like the men of war. And they shall march everyone on his way. And they shall not break their ranks. Neither shall one thrust another. They shall walk everyone in his path. And when they fall upon the sword, they shall not be wounded. For they shall run to and fro in the city. They shall run upon the wall. They shall climb up upon the houses. They shall enter in at the windows like a thief. The earth shall quake before them. The heavens shall tremble. The sun and the moon shall be dark, and the stars shall withdraw their shining. Joel 2:10. And the remnant of the Jacob, declares Micah, shall be in the midst of many people, as they do from the Yahshua, and as the shower up on the grass, that it tarrieth not for men, nor waiteth for the sons of men. And the remnant of Jacob shall be among the Gentiles in the midst of many people, as a lion among the beasts of the forest, as a young lion among the flocks of the sheep, who, if he go through, both treadeth down and teareth in pieces, and none can deliver. Thine hand shall be lifted up upon thine adversaries, and all thine enemies shall be cut off. Micah 5:7-9. And in that day, as the Yeshua, will I make Jerusalem a burdensome stone for all people. All that burden themselves with it shall be cut in pieces, though all the people of the earth be gathered together against it. In that day shall the Yeshua defend the inhabitants of the Jerusalem, and he that is feeble among them at that day shall be as the David, and the house of the David shall be as the Yahweh, as the angel of the Yahweh. Before them, Zechariah 12:3-8, Revelation 9:19. For their power is in their mouth and in their tails. As we have already observed, the only power in the mouth of the Yahweh's people is the word which they proclaim. For the word of Yahweh is quick and powerful and sharper than any two-edged sword, piercing even to the dividing asunder of the soul and spirit and of the joints and marrow, and of the discerner of the thoughts and intents of the heart. Hebrews 4:12, for the power and the tail, and that which follows them, is the power in their convert. This is borne out by the identical significance of the locust tail, which as previously explained, represent the convert made by the early Christian ministry. Correspondingly, then the horses' tails represent the converts to be made by the latter-day antipical apostolic ministry, having tails like unto serpents and heads with which they do hurt. They are a great people and are strong. There hath not been ever the light, neither shall be any more after it. Joel 2:2. They are Yahweh's army, invincible. Thus Yahweh's people and the closing work for the world will surpass in the power even the early apostolic disciples. Such faith, wisdom, determination and zeal as no other people have ever possessed will invest every believer with a commensurate power such as none others have ever had. Consequently, before them all faces shall gather blackness, and nothing shall prevail against them, no, not even the gates of hell. Just as the rapid accession of the converts' tales to the church yesterday is what enraged the enemies of the Asura, who wanted to keep the people under their control then, so the conversion of the great multitude to the church today is what will hurt those who want to keep the people under their control now, for the very fact that the serpent, like the tails, have heads with which they do hurt, denotes that the converts to the church will have an active part with the ministry and the promotion of the gospel. Each horse significantly has a lion-like head and serpent-like tail, the one looking ahead and the other watching behind. They therefore can represent but one inseparable host as an army with the banners, going forth into all the world, conquering and the conquered. Okay, and it says, Prophets and Kings 7:25. For the composite symbolism, rider, lion's head, horse's body, and serpent-like tail, in the comparison with that of the locust, indicates that whereas the earlier apostolic believers were killed by their enemies like helpless locusts, Yahweh's people, they shall, as invincible horses, suffer no harm at any hand. For the angelic beings that sat on them are the ones who, though invisible to the human eye, will lead everyone in his path, Joel 2:5, and who, having breastplates of the fire and of the jettison and brimstone, will cause any sword fitted against the saints to break and fall as powerless as a straw. See early writings, page 34. Great Controversy 6:11. Life Sketches 102. Revelation 9:20-21. And the rest of the men which were not killed by these plagues, yet repented not of their works of their hands, that they should not worship devils and idols of gold and silver and brass and stone and of woods, which neither can see nor hear nor walk, neither repented they of their murders nor of their sorceries nor of their fornication nor of their thefts. It says the fact that the rest of the men which were not killed by the fire, smoke, and brimstone repented not is conclusive evidence that in the closing of the events of the sixth trumpet and in the beginning of the events of the seventh, the work of the gospel is to be finished and probation is to close. In the days of the voice of the seventh angel, when he shall begin to sound, the mystery of Yahweh shall be finished, as he hath declared unto his servants the prophet, Revelation 10:7. Then it will be said, he that is unjust, let him be unjust still. He which is filthy, let him be filthy still. And he that is righteous, let him be righteous still. And he that is holy, let him be holy still. Revelation 22:11. how to get on with the sequence of the six trumpets, we come to the events to take place just before the seventh trumpet sound. Revelation 10, verse 1 to 3, 8 to 10. And I saw another mighty angel come down from the heaven, clothed with a cloud, and a rainbow was upon his head, and his face was as it were the sun, and his feet as the pillars of the fire. And he had in his hand a little book open, and he set his right foot upon the sea and his left foot on the earth, and cried with a loud voice, as when a lion roareth. And the voice which I heard from the heaven spake unto me again, and said, Go and take the little book which is open in the hand of the angel which standeth upon the sea and upon the earth. And I went unto the angel and said unto him, Give me the little book. And he said unto me, Take it and eat it up, and it shall make thy belly bitter, but it shall be sweet in thy mouth as honey. And I took the little book out of the angel's hand and ate it up, and it was in my mouth sweet as the honey. And as soon as I had eaten it, my belly was bitter. We have omitted Revelation 10:4 as it deals with the seven thunders, a subject about which John was told not to write and which remained unrevealed. For this mighty angel, he who set his right foot upon the sea and his left on the earth, and who instructed John to eat the book, has been long understood to represent the message which was proclaimed on both the land and sea worldwide by the William Miller and his associates, beginning in 1831 A.D., Great Controversy 331, and culminated in the disappointment of 1844. This subject is treated of more fully in the tract number 6, Why Perish, Revised Edition, 59-63. For the surpassing joy with which the all-engrossing thought that the Yahshua was coming and the autumn of 1844 A.D. possessed the believers then was indeed as sweet as honey to them. But when the longingly awaited hour came and failed, the joyous expectation, the sweet hope turned to the bitter of the disappointment. They didn't so not only because they had still longer to remain on this cursed and hapless earth, sin convulsed and death weary, instead of entering into a land where there is no more death, neither sorrow nor crying, neither any more pain, Revelation 21:4, but also because they were mocked by their wicked multitude who hated the idea that the world was then coming to an end. And this great joy of the expectation and bitterness and disappointment was fulfilled the forecast. It was in my mouth sweet as a honey, and as soon as I had eaten it, my belly was bitter. Revelation 10:10. So, chapter 10, verse 10, we see, has taken us back to the disappointment of 1844. Also, we see that verses 10 and 11 are sequential. Obviously, the latter must therefore carry us on to the next great event, which was to take place, and which was to bring light, hope, and courage unto the event of this heartened church of Yahweh, says John, concerning the angel's prediction of what was to follow in Revelation 10:11. And he said unto me, thou must prophesy again before many peoples and nations and tongues and kings. To correct the misunderstanding on the Daniel 8:14, the prophetic word of Yahweh declared, thou must prophesy again. That is, repeat the preaching of the Asir coming unto the earth. But as his people were then greatly confused and unable to reconcile the scriptures, Yahweh sent into their midst one of Ellen G. Harmon, 17 years old age, to be his mouthpiece unto them. He was given a vision relative to the disappointment and the ingathering of the full first fruit, the 144,000. See early writings 13 to 20. By that time, it was understood that the statement, the sanctuary shall be cleansed, did not mean that Yahshua was to cleanse the earth in 1844, but rather that in the fulfillment of the Daniel 7, 9, and 10, he was to cleanse the heavenly sanctuary. This is the very event which opened the seals and sounded the trumpets, and which, as we have seen, John was told should be hereafter. See Revelation chapters 4 and 5. Possessed of this understanding, a small group of the believers, who later called themselves Seventh-day Adventists, organized into a body and zealously moved on with the prospects in which, in view of the gathering in the servants of our Yahweh, 144,000, this work appeared to them to be an overwhelmingly great task, and it met with the ridicule on every side. And so, for the kingdom of heaven is like unto a net that was cast into the sea, and gathered of every kind, which when it was full, when the prospective number was made up, they drew to shore and sat down and gathered the good into vessels and cast the bad away. Matthew 13:47-48. The result was that they began to doubt and to question and variously to explain away their former position, both as to the number to be gathered in and the generation to witness the end until today. The subject of the 144,000 has become to them one of the most confused and muted of the Bible subjects. But now the message and the shepherd's rod reveals that the 144,000 who are to be without guile in their mouth, the appointed number of the first fruit servant to be sealed, and the church are to be separated from the unconsecrated, and the number to be sealed being much smaller than the number of the membership. It sadly reminds us that therein are many terrors, and as much as the paramount purpose and hope of the SDA denomination from its outset has been to gather the 144,000, they should be more conversant with this subject than with any other, rather always to give an answer unto every man that asketh a reason of his hope, 1 Peter 3:15. Sadly, though, it is not. Instead, it is more ignorant of who and what are the 144,000 than it is perhaps of any other Bible truth. And what is still sadder, many of his teachers who are refusing to accept this most Startling Revelation, Testimony to Ministers, page 445, are now insisting that a knowledge of the subject is not essential to their soul salvation, and thereby they are saying that they are rich and increased with the good and have need of nothing, thus implying that Yahweh has put a non-essential subject in the Bible, thus they are self-doomed to remain wretched, unhappy, and miserable, troubled, and poor, in need of the truth, and blind, benighted, and naked without the righteousness of the Yahshua, and consequently to reject the words, I counsel thee to buy of me gold fried in the fire, that thou mayest be rich and anoint thine eyes with eye salve, that thou mayest see, Revelation 3:17-18. And sadder yet, even after our brethren are plainly shown that 144,000 are only the first fruit, and that the second are still to be gathered in, they refuse to be convinced, ostensibly following on in the fatal steps which from the very beginning have led into the ditch every leadership at the revelation of a new message. Okay. Failing as a natural sequence to grasp the fact that the angel said, thou must prophesy again before many peoples and nations and tongues and kings, Revelation 10:11, but not before all, they blindly insist that they are commissioned and ready to prophesy before all that is to finish their work in all the world, and this despite the deplorable later sin condition, for the trumpet symbolism has now brought us up to the time of the end gathering of the first fruits, 144,000. First fruits predicate second fruits, for it is necessarily true that there can be no first where there is no second. Wherefore, just as there is a prophetic commission for the ingathering of the first fruits from the many nations, so there must be one for the ingathering of the second fruits from all nations, there being moreover an important event and a message at the commencement of the ingathering of the first fruits from the many nations. Since 1844, so must there be an important event and a message signalizing the commencement of the ingathering of the second fruits, the great multitude from all nations. This logic leads us unto Isaiah's prophecy, for by the fire and by his sword will the Yahshua plead with all flesh, and the slain of the Yahshua shall be many, and iron will send those that escape of them unto the nation that have not heard my fame, neither have seen my glory, and they shall declare my glory among the Gentiles, Isaiah 66:16-19. For the action in verse 20 shows that the slain in the verse 16 affects the separation of the first fruits in the church. Indeed, were the church not the scene of the slain, then those who escaped from it, Yahweh could not send to the nation the Gentiles, for they themselves would be heathen instead of the antitypical apostolic believers and leaders, and he would then be sending heathen unto heathen, and as he escaped are to go to the Gentiles for the proclaiming of his fame unto them. The slaughter evidently takes place before the close of the probation and does not harm those who at that time know not his fame. verse 20 of Isaiah 66 also reveals that those who escape the slain of Yahshua will be sent not unto many, but unto all nations. And 2, it reveals that instead of the bringing 144,000 only, the escaped one will bring all their brethren for an offering unto the Yahshua out of all the nations, upon the horses and then in chariots and litters and upon the mules and upon the swift beasts of my holy mountain, Jerusalem, saith the Yahshua, as the children of Israel bring an offering in a clean vessel into the house of Yahweh, Isaiah 66:20. Revelation 11:1, and there was given me a reed like unto a rod, and the angel stood, saying, arise and measure the temple of Yahweh, and the altar, and them that worship therein. Though the last verse, 11 of Revelation 10, brings us to the rise of the SDH denomination and to the commission to go to many nations, it does not describe the message which the denomination was to proclaim. So the 11th chapter, being a continuation of the 10th, must disclose it. During the period of the sixth trumpet, there is no literal temple. Thus, measuring Revelation 11:1 can refer only to a spiritual temple made up of the lively stone saints, as described in the Ephesians chapter 2, 20-22, or to a figure of the heavenly temple. In either case, the clause measuring them that worship therein must figuratively mean the number of them, for the worshipers are not measured but numbered. In view of this fact, we are compelled to conclude, and unless otherwise show, that the temple, the altar, and the worshipers must each be figurative of a class of the believers, and all three must be measured, numbered after the disappointment in 1844 and during the time of the SDA movement, considering that therein are good and bad members, then very obviously this measuring or numbering the whispers is nothing more or less than a work of investigating and judging their fidelity to the truth. Hence it is a work of the retaining in the books only the names of those who have endured unto the end and measured up unto the standard of the judgment. The character of the Yahshua incontrovertibly, therefore, the measuring or numbering figures forth the work of the investigative judgment. Thus, the doctrine of the investigative judgment, along with the doctrine of the ingathering and numbering of the 144,000, comprises the present truth commitment to the SDA denomination in 1844, and these two great truths up unto the additional message of today. Early Writings, page 277. For the SDA denomination was proclaimed before many peoples and nations and tongues and kings. For the investigative judgment decides the cases of those who have professed faith in the Yahweh and who, in the consequence, have had their name recorded in their books, Daniel 7:10. But some of whom have not endured unto the end, it determined which names shall be retained and which shall be blotted out. So not until the investigation is completed, the sanctuary cleansed from the unworthy members, will the books show the exact number of the names that will be retained and accounts worthy of the life eternal. For the most important part of this work, however, is not the numbering, but the separating of the sitting of the judicial tribunal for the gathering of, parabolically speaking, the good into the vessels, but to cast the bad away from the net, Matthew 13:48, which contains the dead from the Adam's time until the 1844, when it was again cast out to catch the 144,000 living saints. For the investigative judgment of the dead consequently takes place in the heavenly temple only, whereas the investigative judgment of the living takes place in the heavenly as well as in the earthly temple. While the records are being made up for the books in the heavenly, the people are being investigated for the separation in the earthly. Matthew 22:11-13. See Malachi 3:1-3. And as a measuring in is figurative of the same work, then it leads unto the conclusion that the temple, as the altar and them that worship therein, must figuratively represent the three classes to be judged. For the temple and the altar, inanimate objects must characterize two classes of the inanimate saints. The two classes of the dead saint. An altar, moreover, obviously cannot be installed in a temple before the temple is built, and furthermore, in size, it is comparatively much smaller than a temple. Naturally, then, it must symbolize a class of the saints which not only comes after those who are characterized by the temple, but which also proportionately much smaller. Thus, the temple, the first and the largest object, must represent the first and largest body of the righteous dead, those from the Adam's time until the beginning of the judgment, 1844, while the altar, a special and smaller object, must represent a special and smaller body of the righteous dead, the righteous who died from 1844 on, and who are to come up in the special resurrection of Daniel 12:2, early writings, page 285. Those who worship therein, being the living saints who are to be measured, they can only be the 144,000, those whom the denomination was since 1844 together and for the translation. Revelation 11:2. That the court which is without the temple, leave it out and measure it not, for it is given unto the Gentiles, and the holy city shall they tread underfoot 42 months. But why leave the court? Why not measure it also? For since it is a part of the building, it too must be symbolical of the saints. Obviously, because it represents the great multitude, which no man could number, measure of all nations and kindreds and people, and tongue. Revelation 7:9. For the last who come from among the Gentiles, the court, in other words, is symbolical of the immeasurable, innumerable harvest of the second fruits brought in after the measurable, innumerable harvest of the first fruits, 144,000. It is not measured, investigated, because it represents those among whom there are no bad to be cast out, for they are gathered in after the cleansing of the heavenly temple, Daniel 8:14. After the judgment of the dead, after the separation of the bad from among the good, and the church, as illustrated by the parable of the net, Matthew 13:47-48. They are those who, by the name, my people, Revelation 18:4, are called to come out of the Babylon, and who with no unclean among them, Isaiah 52:1, come into the already purified and living church of the Yahweh. For more extensive treatment of the subject of the investigative judgment, see our tract number 3, The Harvest, a third edition. For the 42 months, align 30 days to a month, and reckoning a day for a year, Ezekiel 4:6, represents a 1260-year prophetic period, 538 A.D. to 1798 A.D., see the Shepherd Rod, Volume 2, page 142 and 261. For the Gentiles here are mentioned are those who tread underfoot the holy city, the church, an act which calls our attention to the Master's prediction concerning the fate of the saints during this 42-month period. And there the church shall fall by the edge of the sword, and shall be led away from the promised land, captive and into all nations, and Jerusalem shall be trodden down by the Gentiles until the times of the Gentiles be fulfilled, Luke 21:24, the time that the Gentiles go out of the Jerusalem and the Israelites go in. For the occupation of the promised land by the Gentiles today was typified by the yesterday's Gentile occupation of it. And when the ancient Israel returned from the Egypt to the land of the promise, the times of the Gentiles in those days were fulfilled. Likewise now, when the antitypical Israel, with the 144,000 godless servants of the Yahweh, are sealed and taken unto Mount Zion, there for the standing with the Lamb, Yeshua, in the times of the Gentiles, and in these days will be fulfilled. For we omit Revelation 11:3-12 from this discussion, for these verses are treated in the Shepherd's Rod, Volume 2, page 273-289. And the revised tract number 2, the warning paradox number, page 47-8, and then the Great Controversy, page 286-288. Revelation 11:13. And the same hour was there a great earthquake, and a tenth part of the city fell, and in the earthquake were slain of men 7,000, and the remnant were fighting, and gave glory unto the Yahweh of heaven. For the hour of the earthquake, the tenth part, the city, the 7,000 slain, and the remnant was to maintain the integrity of the entire Trump symbolism, themselves being symbolical, climaxing the events symbolized by the remnant were fighting, and gave glory unto the Yahweh of heaven. None but those who keep the commandments of Yahweh and have the testimony of Yahshua Messiah can truly fear and give glory unto him. Accordingly, in the present connection, the remnant is necessarily figurative of the righteous, the wheat, and that part of the city which fell. This makes the 7,000 slain figurative of the unrighteous, the terrors therein. Hence the 10th stands for the church which is first purified, in which the bad, the tares, are separated from the good, the wheat, obviously. Therefore, the rest of the city is in this instant a representation of the rest of the Christian world, Christendom as a whole. Thus, the earthquake takes place not through our Christendom, Thus the earthquake takes place not throughout the Christendom alone, but throughout the church from which is separated the first faith, 144,000, and since an earthquake is a shaking, then the one and the point is figurative of a shaking therein. Long ago, though, the spirit of the prophecy, early writers 270, yesterday's church was forewarned of the shaking, and now in the present graphic revelation is seen as fatal, is seen as fatal end, the destruction of all who do not become affrighted and give glory unto Yahweh, figuratively numbering 7,000. These slain in the church comprehend that element which does not sigh and cry for the abominations Ezekiel 9:4, and which, as a consequence, fails to receive the mark Ezekiel 9:4, or the seal Revelation 7:3-8 of the Yahweh's approbation. All who compose this class are cut off, leaving the remnant who were affrighted, those who have sighed and cried for the abominations, and who have consequently received the mark of the seal and escaped the slaughter. These are they who shall sing for the majesty of the heaven to Isaiah 24:14. Give glory unto the Yahweh of the heaven. Chapters 10 and 11 of the Revelation cover a series of events different from those of the chapter 9. Verse 13 of the 11th chapter brings us up only until the time of the fulfillment of the marking and slaying, Ezekiel 9, and the church, or to the commencement of the loud crying of the third angel's message, Revelation 9, verses 20 and 21, carries us on until the completion of the gospel and the end gathering of the saints for the second woe, sixth trumpet, is past, and behold, the third woe cometh quickly, Revelation 11:14, the seventh trumpet, Revelation 11:15-19. This brings the end of our study. This is our contest. This is the 11th hour call. Number 11 took on our audio archive. We'll close now with a song.